We're done.
So we're going to talk about desired state configuration. Now, desired state configuration only exists with PowerShell 4.0. And so that is, you know, Windows 8.1 has PowerShell 4. Windows Server 2012 R2 also has PowerShell 4. You can install PowerShell 4 on Windows Server 2012, and I'm not sure what else. Now the funny thing, maybe it's funny, if you have Windows 8.0, then that has PowerShell 3. You cannot install PowerShell 4 on Windows 8. It's probably a good thing. The way that you get PowerShell 4 is to do the free upgrade from Windows 8 to 8.1. And then you will have PowerShell 4. And 8.1 is faster. You know, it has a lot of nice new features like being able to resize your tiles and stuff like that. So that's why I say it's probably a good thing. There's also more PowerShell commandlets and stuff on Windows 8.1. So we're going to talk about desired state configuration. Now, one of the things that's really interesting about desired state configuration is that this is the kind of thing that I wished that I had had when I was a network administrator. Because when I was a network administrator, what we had is we had a big notebook that we kept, and it was called our build book. And you would go through the book, you know, and it would tell you how to build a new server. And so the idea of the build book was that when you are done, all of your servers are identical. Right. Yes. And the problem was they were never identical. Even if you had the very same person build every single server that your company ever deployed, and he had this same book, and he came into a room and he had 100 keyboards, and he just starts tap 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 all the way around the room, yeah, like a little bitty bunny rabbit hopping around. They would never, ever, ever be the same. Why? Well, I don't know about where you work, but where I used to work, I'm over here, I'm in the middle, you know, of a building, you know, a four-node, you know, fully redundant compact cluster that I'm going to install Exchange on. Yeah, you know, and I've got three active and one passive, you know, and I've got all the HBAs, I've got boxes everywhere from all of this stuff, plugging this stuff in. You know, I'm out here trying to get this stuff done, and I put in, you know, my compact quick start, and I'm trying to update the drivers. Well, what happens? The boss walks in. Hey, Ed, how are you doing? Well, yeah, where are you at? How much you got left to do? I have no idea now, dude. Man, I just forgot what I was doing. You know? Yeah, you were wanting me to configure your phone, right? Yeah, set up speed dial for you. So this is what happens. I mean, like maybe you're smiling, and maybe this is because this happened to you too one time or another, or all the time. So that's the problem. Okay? Now, the thing that is so good about this, and maybe if I had had DSC and PowerShell when I was a net admin, I might still be a network administrator. Yeah, maybe not. But, you know, That's one of the reasons I'm not. You know, is because you start to go crazy. You have two servers that are identical. One works, the other doesn't. But the hardware is fine. Maybe they're not identical after all. But what is different? It could drive you crazy. With PowerShell desired state configuration, it no longer matters. Because I can press a button and boom, they will be identical. So no longer does it matter what is different between the two, or between the 2 million, doesn't matter. I don't know about, yeah, but that's really good news. I mean, I can remember hours where I used WinDiff to try to compare, you know, system INI files and config INI files, you know, and registry hives, you know, and other junk, trying to find, you know, where something was different. And now we don't have to find where something is different. All we need to do is know what I want to be the same. So in this script right here, what I'm going to do is so with desired state configuration, there are four things that I must have. One, I use the configuration keyword. Two, I give it a name. Three, I specify my node. And four, I specify the resource. Now, I will go along with this and explain what these parts are. So configuration, I'm going to call this set services. The node is going to be my two servers, S1 and S2. Now, you would not need to hard code these, you know, but for what I'm doing here, this is what we're going to do. I'll show you at the very end a way that is more scalable. What I'm using here is built in to PowerShell 4. This is the service resource. In PowerShell 4.0, we have 7 built-in resources. I used to know what they are. I'm not sure I can get them now. Service, registry, local user, local group, registry, file, a bunny rabbit? I don't know. But it doesn't matter. They're all there available. And then on the script center, I showed you where there were 11 more that the PowerShell team has made available, including Active Directory, web administration, clustering, SMB shares, and so forth. Oh, there's a zip provider, a compressed file provider. That was the 7th one. And it's cool. But anyway, that's just me. So the service provider, bits. This is the name that I want to call this. I mean, I could call this Mr. Red if I wanted to. It doesn't matter. So now with the service provider, notice now, let me show you what I did. So I highlight the provider. Okay, I double-click, highlight the provider, I right-click, and say, start IntelliSense. And this now gives me the information that I need. The name, the account, credential, depends on startup type, disabled, manual, automatic. So those are the values that I put here, name, startup type, state, built-in account. Okay, so this is where I found that information, was from IntelliSense. that told me what I could put here, 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 and here. So the name of the service is Bits. I want it to be automatic, I want it to be running, and I'm going to use local system. The next service, so I use the service provider once again. This time I'm going to check, configure the browser service, disabled, stop, local system. The DHCP service, I want it to be running, I want it to be automatic, I want it to be the local service. Okay, and so then for every service that I had that I wanted to either run or I wanted to not run, or I wanted to be manual and, you know, whatever, you know, you can, however you want to set it up. For every one of those services, I just go through here, and in my script, I just specify these. Okay? And so then, whenever I run this configuration on those target machines, they're done, and they are automatically set exactly the way that I wanted them to be. I can run this as often as I want. I can use a scheduled job in the task scheduler, and I can have it run this every hour, every half hour, every 15 minutes, once a day, once a week, once a month, whatever. Okay? It just depends on how careless maybe some of the other administrators are on your service. And you could even run another script that would detect when it changed and then call it, you know, using Windows events. So this is very, very powerful. So what this does is this part creates what is called a MOF file. M-O-F. Yeah, no, it's just like all the other MOFs that we've had in the lab. Managed Object Format. Now, this, I'm going to show you the MOF file in just a second, but this is the same type of technology that was used with WMI, Windows Management Instrumentation. Okay, so I run this script, and what this will do is it will create one MOF for server 1, it will create another MOF for server 2. I am going to put these into a folder that is called server config. And we can see that the output here shows me that it went to server config, and I've got S1 and S2 MOF. Now let's open up one of these. So this is a plain text file, and I've opened it up in Notepad. So it lets me know the target node, who ran it, what time, and the host machine that generated the file, which was my workstation named C1. So then this is an instance of a service resource. So remember I used the service keyword. Right here, that's the service keyword. So that is the resource that we used. So then I specified that the resource IDs, bits, is running, the account, and so forth and so on. So you can see that what we did in our script, using a nice PowerShell syntax, generated this text file. that is a moth file. It's still readable, but the script gives me an easy way to generate this moth. Now, whenever I call start DSC configuration, then it will go through the path that I tell it to go to, and every single moth it finds in that folder, it will connect to the machine and set the configuration for me. So in my server config, this folder has two moth files. S1 and S2. And when I run this, then what it will do is it will connect to the machines. So we can see that it created a job and that it has executed this on these different machines over there. Has more data is true. So it tells me that the job is waiting, is running, and by now that the job is done. So what I want to do now is to connect to these other machines over here. This time I'm just going to use getSimInstance to S1 and S2, and I'm going to look for service for the status of bits, DHCP, and browser. And we can see that that bits is running, and that DHCP is running. And DHCP is running, and that browser is disabled and stopped, and browser is disabled and stopped. Okay? So this is a very simple example of using the DCS to configure services on remote servers. Now, if, for instance, let's just do this just for fun. So I'm not going to do this, but this one time. So let's go over here to S1. La la la. Hopefully this won't take too long. I thought I could change this here. Maybe not. So I don't use the graphical tool very often. Okay, let's see here. How do I do this? I go to admin tools. Let's go over to admin tools, maybe. And services. I thought I could do it from there, but since I have it disabled, it wouldn't let me. So browser. Computer browser. Okay, so we want this to be automatic, and then apply, and then start it, and then apply. So now we have set the browser service to be running on this machine, and so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to simply come back, and so somebody calls up and they says, hey, the services are wrong, and so I don't know which server maybe. Or maybe not, I don't care. I just press F8, I rerun this, and then we can use invoke command for S1. I'm just going to use S1, and then get service browser. It says it stopped, and we had it running. Okay, so it's that fast. It fixes it, and so, and if anything had changed on the other server, it would have fixed that as well. So I can run this as many times as I need to. It doesn't matter, and it really doesn't. Yeah, so and just press F8. But you can also see that once the MAW file is generated and that the configuration has been done, you can see that it's very fast when I run it multiple times later on. Okay? So that's working with services. So let's take a look at, go in and look at some stuff that's a bit more interesting. So this is actually pretty cool. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to create a script folder. So on this right here, so this is going to create a script folder on S1, and the source is from DC1. Share. The destination path is going to put it in C/scripts. Then we're going to make sure that the directory is present. We're going to recurse, and that's it. So this is using the file provider. So the file provider will do both files and folders. It will create the folder if it exists. Or if it doesn't exist, then it doesn't create it, you know, if we don't want it to. So now ensure, the thing that's interesting about ensure is that I can say ensure that it is present or ensure that it is absent. So by making a very small change to my DSC, I can make sure that something happens or does not happen. This is actually useful when you are doing demonstrations or when you are in a lab and you are working on stuff. So you run through and it didn't quite work exactly right. So then you just go back in and change it to absent, press enter, boom, it removes everything and you can try it again. So this is very useful and worthwhile. So this dump is going to output to server config. So I run this, and so then once we have done this, then I also, you can create the MAW file, and you can start the DSC all at the same time. So you do not have to do this as separate steps if you do not want to. So I'm going to come back over here, and so I'm going to run this command. And we can see that I run this command and that I've got the, so this is on S1, and I've got the folders and the files that are there. So I'm going to run this, and now that deletes the files and the folders. And if I come back and say run, if I come back and say run this again, then we can see that they do not exist. So if I was to run the configuration and then I come back over here and I say, okay, show me the scripts.
Doing?
Huh?
Just
round
half of the command.
You can
select all the... Yeah, but what I'm saying is that this is a... It's weird.
Well, it's just a red one.
Yeah, it's red. It shouldn't be red.
So, if 9?
No, there we go. Okay. So, that's strange. It's not refreshing. The screen's not refreshing. But you can see that when I run the command, then now we can get the folders are back. So if you've got files that are on a folder that get deleted or whatever, then they can easily be added back, and that's by using the file provider there. Okay, so the next one thing I'm going to do is I'm going to use this, and we're now going to add a role to our servers. And so the first thing I'm going to do is on S1, I'm going to install IIS. So we have a Windows feature provider. Now this could be very useful. So I'm going to add a Windows feature to my machine. Actually, I'm going to add two. So like the PowerShell ISE is a Windows feature, and it's not installed by default on your servers. If you want it, then you could add it to all of your servers. I don't think that would be a really good idea. Personally, with PowerShell remoting, I think you should be working from your workstation and not working on your server writing scripts, but hey, that's me. So we can add our Windows features. So I'm going to ensure that it's present, and I'm going to do the web server, and I am going to do the ASP feature. And so this will do this for S1. Now this time what I'm going to do is I am not specifying an output path. So I just call the DSC, which is install IIS. I'm not giving it any parameters. But I know that if I do not give this a default path, an out path, then it's going to create it in my working directory. It will create a folder that is the same name as the DSC configuration. Okay? So I don't know. I'm just showing you that you can do this. You know, personally, I'd prefer to give it a specific path and put all of my configurations in a specific location. I don't like having them all in individual folders off the root. But, you know. But yeah, I'm just showing you what you can do or what would happen if you did do something. I'm also going to specify wait. So before, what we was doing when we ran the DSC configuration, what would happen is that we would, the script would complete and we would see that we had a job running. So we're now going to wait for the job to complete, and Verbose is going to show us everything that the desired state configuration is doing as it makes the configuration. And this can be very useful and instructive for us. So we can see that we're collecting data, we're setting our resources and all of this. It's also telling us the percentage of time right here that is going on with the installation. The thing that is amazing about this is not very much code. You know, the whole thing here is 27 lines long, and that includes blank spaces and stuff. So it's very little code that we have to write to be able to accomplish this. Now in a little bit, I'm going to put all of this together, you know, so and the script will be a lot longer, but it will do a lot more too. So with Verbose, this lets me know that this job took 25 seconds, or 65 seconds. And this is useful information because as we are running these on different machines, we can see this information, and this lets us know what we can expect. So is it taking too long or not? I don't know. But we can know if it was standard amount of time was being used. We can look back through here and see if there was any errors. And if the errors were called, if there was anything that was important. We also see where the moth file went. So now I'm going to check the web role on my server and see what we have. So I ran this on S1. And we can see now that it says that the web server and ASP.NET is installed on the remote computer. So I open up my browser, I go to S1, and we can see the default website is running, which is probably not a good idea, but we can see the default website is running on this machine. Okay, so now let's take this a step further. That's weird. I don't know why that line just turned red on me. So what I'm going to do now is I am going to create a website on my remote machine. So I'm going through this step by step. This is not something I would not do this step by step in real life. But so now we're going to go and create the new website. And with this website, then what I'm going to do is I'm going to run this on S1. I'm going to give the website a name, which is Fourth Coffee. And I'm specifying that the files for the website are on the local machine already. Now, if they were not on the local machine, I could use that file provider resource that I used earlier where I copied my script files down, and I could copy all of my website files down to my target server. Okay, so I didn't do this in this case, but I could have used, I've done it that way. Then this is the destination for the website, which is iNet Pubs, Fourth Coffee. I'm going to import the XWeb administration resource. Now this one is a resource from the DSC resource kit that I showed you at the very beginning. So if you want to use this or one of the others, you go to the Scripting Guys website and download them from that location. They will be compressed as zip files. You unblock them, unzip them, and use them. So this, I'm also going to install the ASP4.5 role. I'm going to stop the default website. I'm going to ensure that my web content is copied from that storage location to the iNet Pub location. I'm going to say that I do not want to do this until ASP.NET 4.5 has been installed and configured. So we can specify dependencies. Then the next thing I need to do is to create a website. So I use the X website resource, specify that it's present, I give it the name, I start it, specify the destination, and this depends upon the web content file resource. Then I create my moth file, and then I start the configuration. so we'll come back up here and we will run this. And then at this point, once this is done, then we will go and browse to the website, and you know, we will see that, hey, it's done. Now you can see that this particular job went pretty fast. It was done in 6 seconds. And this is because we had already had installed the web service and the ASP service on the remote machine. So now if I browse to the website, we can see that we've got the fourth coffee. Pretty cool? So the next thing that we want to do then is, this time what I'm going to do is I want to do this on more than one machine. And so what I'm going to do is I am going to create a configuration data file. Now, a configuration data file is a PSD1 extension, and it is an array of hash tables. So I just open up the at curly sign, specify all nodes, so this is my array, this is my hash table, and so these are variables which are going to be the same for all of my web servers, whether it's 1 or 100, it does not matter. And so this is why the star there, so this is all the nodes, the website name, the source path, the destination, the default website path. And then anything that I needed to configure specifically, then I could do down here under the nodes. So I could specify other things in these locations that would be unique to those servers. Where I could write code that would do a query from Active Directory and pull back all of my servers that were in an ISOU, for instance. However I want to do this. So this is showing you how that for a smaller number of machines that I can set things that would be common for all of them, and how then I could do specific things only for those. And I could filter them out by role that I would define and say that the role is web or what have you. Now, when I specify that role information over here, this is just something that I made up. Yeah, I could call this, you know, anything, it wouldn't matter. Yeah, I could give them names. And so when I do this, so all nodes where the role is equal to web. So if I had defined other roles that I called file, other nodes that I called print, you know, what have you, then SQL, then I would have separate nodes under here where I could filter out this. So this role is a user-defined property that I could specify so that I can filter out and become more granular in the way that my files configure the machines. So now I'm saying that I install the IIS role. I'm going to install the ASP role. Now I did this on S1, but I have not done this on S2. And so then we're going to stop the default websites. We're going to make sure that we have our web content, and this source path is on the local, is on the servers already. So we're copying it from the servers to the inetpub directories. Depends on ASP. So then we're going to create the new website. And so I'm ensuring that, notice that I address it by node dot instead of like the specific node names. And so now when I run the configuration, then I specify the PSD1 file as a value for the configuration data parameter. And then I do this, and then I'm going to call the DSC. We will go into this folder where we will have, in this case, there will be two MOF files for us. And we run the script, and we got through there, la 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 la. So we're collecting the data, we're applying it. Notice that we're checking this on S1, you can see right there. Starting our installation, set the target resource and all of that. We've got a microphone that we're going to have to use for questions so that they'll be recorded. So now we're on S2, and we're checking that, we're doing this, and we're going along and applying this stuff. So there, we're done. So it took 81 seconds, but it seems like it takes a lot longer. And so now we come down, and so we come over here. This is for the coffee side for S1, and so now I'm going to go to S2. And run there, and it's working, it's thinking about it, and there, now we're on S2. Okay? So, that's actually pretty cool. So we just configured the websites on both of the servers. And so we did all that work, and everything was like really hard and all that. And then all of a sudden, somebody comes along and they delete our website. Oh no, Mr. Bennett. And so we come along. And now this is the error that I get now. Now I don't know about you, but if I when I was a network administrator, it seemed that the problems like this always occurred about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And so the phone rings and I pick up the phone, and it's like, and so I go and I look, and this says access denied. So if it's 3 o'clock in the morning and I've just been awakened from my sleep, and I see access denied, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go to the INET pubs directory, and I'm going to start looking and changing permissions, and see if it works. And it doesn't, of course, but once I finally figure out the problem and I get the website back up and running, am I going to refix the permissions I had? Probably not. I'm going back to sleep. I'll fix it in the morning. Then you get to the morning, and of course, there's all kinds of other stuff. And then the next thing you know, your company's been hacked. They stole 1 billion bitcoins, and you're bankrupt. It's a bummer. See, if that had DSC, that would have never happened. So the thing is with DSC, though, it does not matter what the problem is. It doesn't, okay? Because I've got desired state configuration. And what I want is for the silly server to work, And so all I need to do then is to go back over here. And So this was my DSC. This is the website from the configuration data. And all I need to do is rerun start DSC configuration. Yeah, so website from configuration. So I rerun the command, la 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 la, blah 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 blah, whatever, whatever. You know, and it says it's done. And I don't know why I just started getting this error. It's lying. I don't know. It's something in the timing on my virtual machine. Because I come back over here, I open this up, and now my website's back up and running. So that's it. Yeah. So they can go in and they can delete the files, mess up stuff, change services or whatever. I rerun that MOF file, and it's done. Okay. And that's it. So we've got a microphone for questions.
Děláme to když tak, že říkejte otázky v češtině, já bych do mikrofonu zopakuje v angličtině.
Nebo jestli si to v angličtině, není problém. Já se to dopočnu. Jak chcete.
Kdo chce otázku v angličtině?
Ano.
Is it possible to write your own providers? Is it possible to write your own providers for DSC?
Absolutely. Next question. yes, it is possible. One of the things that you want to do is you want to go to the go to the script, you guys, script repository, and take a look at the DSC resources that we have on the script repository. No, I don't want to exclude survey, that's enough. DSC resource kit, and then just say groovy, and then what you do is you look at this. And this will take you today. You download the file. Once you get the file downloaded, then take you back up here. And so I put them into program files. This is in PowerShell 4, Windows PowerShell modules. And you can see these are my X files. If you know the TV show, get to the administration. And so DSC resources. So what we have got here is a website PSM, and then the schema MOF, and then there was also the PSD file, which was right there, the PSD1 file. So you need a schema MOF, a PSD1, and a PSM1 file. And so take these, download them, look at them, and study how they built it, and go forth and write your own resources.
And if you will want to share it with the community, just put C at the beginning of the resource. It's something like the naming convention of X for Microsoft One and C for community.
Yes, that is true.
Can I get the microphone? Or?
Mr. Microphone?
Hi, good afternoon. I have a question regarding the persistent PowerShell workflows. What happens when I execute a long-running workflow and then close the PowerShell window or even reboot a computer? Can I somehow resume the workflow or how does this work?
Yes. So the way that it works is that the Windows PowerShell workflow uses the PowerShell job engine, and so in the background what we're doing is we're running jobs. Now we also use PowerShell remoting, and so what happens then is that on your target machine you start a long-running workflow, and if you disconnect, what you have then is a disconnected remoting session, if you will. And so the PowerShell, the job just keeps connecting and percolating and bubbling along in the background. You can then go back and reconnect to this, and look at it, receive the results or whatever, just like you would like receive a job. I've got some articles about this on the Scripting Guide blog. Richard Sinaway is the PowerShell MVP that actually wrote a series of articles on that. And my series is like from very beginning, and I did not talk about disconnected sessions and stuff. But he does have that where he talks about rebooting a computer, reconnecting and stuff, and you should take a look at those. But that is one of the reasons why you would want to use Workflow, is for long-running jobs so you can disconnect your session. Let me give you an example. When I was in Scotland, I was getting the daily bits of Windows Vista. And so this was a long time ago. But so I was in the Microsoft office there in Edinburgh. And so I would come into the office first thing in the morning, and I would open up my laptop, and I would start a bits job to download last night's build of Vista. So I would, and it would run all day. And then at the end of the day, I would have my laptop there, I would chain it to the desk, I would go down to the pub and have supper. And then I would come back to the office about 8 or 9, 10 o'clock at night, get my laptop, and everything was downloaded. So that's the problem. Yeah, when you have a long-running job, something like that, is that, you don't want to have to or what happens if your network connectivity drops for a second, or they have to reboot the router, and you're 8 hours into something that's going to take 16 hours. So we handled the disconnected sessions using the jobs engine, and it worked really, really good. So one of the questions that we had during the break is somebody asked me, well, I can do a lot of stuff with invoke command. Why do I need to use Workflow? Okay, so there's essentially three reasons why you would want to use Workflow over Invoke Command or something. One is using the checkpoint restarts. So you're checkpointing these long-running activities, you're persisting stuff to data. The thing blows up in the middle of it, so it can restart, and you're not going all the way back to the beginning. So that's one thing. The ability to disconnect and reconnect, that's another thing. The ability to run things in parallel is a very, very big one. There's a really good article by a PowerShell MVP named Nicholas Good that's on my that's on the Scripting Guide blog, where he was talking about doing a ping scan of his network, and he's got a very large network, using ping, sending it out to do a bunch of pings, it would take 5 hours. Using PowerShell in a workflow environment, it took 15 minutes. So, and I'm just making those numbers up, but it was something very dramatic like that. So that would be another really good article to take a look at. Besides, Nicholas is just a cool guy anyway. So, next question. Yes, sir.
Hi. Are there any language restrictions for workflows, or I can use anything I can use in normal PowerShell script?
Yes and no. there are, let's see, this is actually in one of my PowerShell books. I've got this in there. I think that there's something like 66 commands and commandlets in PowerShell that you cannot use in Workflow, or that are not Workflow aware. Okay, and I'm making that number up, but it's something like that. And the reason I said yes and no is because I can use non-Workflow aware commandlets when I use the inline script. Okay? So using inline script, I can do anything I want, including calling a 20-year-old DB script. You know, if I wanted to really be froggy, yeah, that would actually be kind of cool, you know, I mean, really and truly, you know, or maybe not, but, you know. Hey, look, you know, I got this really cool PowerShell workflow, and you look at it, and it's called VBScript. Why not? You know, it'd be kind of fun. So that's why I said yes and no. But the thing is, some of these PowerShell commands that are not workflow aware don't make sense in a workflow. You know, I mean, you just wouldn't use them anyway, not inside of a PowerShell workflow. I can't think of one off the top of my head. But by and large, you can do pretty much anything you need to do in a workflow, especially since you've got that inline script resource. But be aware that there are some things that you may try to use directly, and they're not gonna like it.
Yeah, because there was one thing I noticed when you use the BS persist parameter,
mm-hmm.
It used the bool notation. You had to do double comma and true.
Yeah.
Why don't you switch for that?
I know. I agree.
Is that the restriction or just?
No, I agree. This is unfortunately, as PowerShell continues to grow, it loses its consistency. We're trying very, very hard to hold it tight. So for instance, in PowerShell 1, you had a switch parameter. It was always a switch parameter. And then somewhere along the way, and if you needed to override something, you would use dash force. And then sometime in the PowerShell 2 time frame, you know, we added that colon, you know, there where you would like say dollar true or something, you know. And I don't like, there has been a lot of debate on the PowerShell team about this, but it's like we opened the door and the cat has already ran out of the apartment and is upstairs, you know, harassing the neighbors, and we can't get him back very easily. Yes, sir.
I have a question to the configuration data file. You show us two nodes in simple configuration for two nodes. Is it possible to have the ball? What seven names for one node?
Yes, so you can run a DSC configuration against hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of servers. What I was showing him is, so I can even query Active Directory, so I can use git-ad computer, you know, and retrieve my servers from AD if I want to, or I can parse a text file if I wish, and in the PSD1 file, the configuration file, I specified everything that was going to be exactly the same, you know, on all of my servers. And then, under the individual nodes by role, then I could specify how I want them to be different. But now remember that PSD1 file is simply an array of hash tables. So I can create the hash table on the fly. As a matter of fact, we have a commandlet that will convert to a hash table. So I can read from a CSV file and create a hash table on the fly and then use that to populate that. So, or I can query from Active Directory, store that in a variable, create a hash table, and go from there. So programmatically, I can configure my configuration file. And that's something that I would need to play with a little bit, but that I would do if I was administering hundreds or thousands or hundreds of thousands of servers. Now, the other thing that you can do is you can also, don't forget, you can use DSC in a workflow if you want to. So you could run in parallel to kick off your DSC configuration against multiple machines if you need to do that. I've actually got a script that I'm working on right now where that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm going to use a workflow to drive configuration, you know, against a number of machines.
Can you use PowerShell for downloading configuration servers machines and then store them as a backups? And then if you need to restore the backups?
So you wanted to download the configuration of your servers?
Yeah.
If you did not use DSC to set the configuration, then it's going to be a manual process. So you would need to define, it'd be a lot of work, but it could be done. I'm just trying to think. I think that I would be, we have a backup module that was introduced in Windows Server 2008. You add Windows Server Backup as a feature, and then you have a number of PowerShell commandlets that you can use to run your backup. I think that I would use that to do a system state backup of my machines, store that on the SAN, and then if I had a disaster or something that I need, I would do that. Or I would use WIM to VHD, yeah, and just do a snapshot store those. Yeah, you could do it in PowerShell. I mean, you could dump the registry, you could copy all of your services, you know, get all of your printer ports, you know, copy all your data files and all that. But you know, to be honest, I think it would be a lot of work, and I think there are better tools that are available. And you could use PowerShell to drive those tools. And I think that you come up with a better, easier, more reliable solution.
So you can still the requirements to connect to remote computers using PowerShell.
I'm sorry, continue.
What are the requirements to connect to remote computers using PowerShell?
Okay, a long time ago, actually before I became the scripting guy, I was in MCS, I was a consultant, and so I will give you the standard consultant's answer. It depends. Yeah, but anyway, it does. So for instance, it depends on what version of Windows PowerShell that you're running. If you're running Windows PowerShell 4.0, then PowerShell remoting is already turned on your remote servers, your 2012 R2 servers. So remoting is turned on, script execution is turned on. Now, that having been said, on PowerShell 3 or PowerShell 2, you need to enable PowerShell remoting, and then you need to enable script execution. I've got a scripting guide blog article where I talk about doing this via group policy. And actually, what I do is I cheat a little bit because I create a VB script that actually group policy runs, because it's easier to do it that way. Once you've got the remoting enabled, which is the WinRM service, then if I am connected to the default remote connection, then I need to have admin rights as an administrator, be a member of the administrator group. But if I am an administrator, then what I can also do is I can create what is called a constrained endpoint. And I do not have any articles about this yet. There are some articles on the PowerShell team blog. But if I create a constrained endpoint, then what I can do is I can specify that any group in Active Directory, so I could say the help desk group, has the ability to connect to this endpoint using PowerShell. And when they connect, they can only use get process, get service, get event log. Maybe that's it, maybe get date. Yeah. I can specify which commandlets I want them to use. Yeah, I could let them use, you know, stop service, restart computer if I want. I could create a special endpoint just for people that were on the help desk for the print servers. And so they could install print drivers. So there's a command called add print driver. So I could give them permission to do that. Use get printer. Create a print report. Create print report. Restart the server if they needed to be able to reboot the server because the driver had to be reloaded into memory or something. So I could set up different levels of endpoints that would give, and then give specific groups that ability. But so this is really nice to be able to do, so I can get granular. I don't have to let somebody be an administrator, you know, and give them the ability to completely mess up everything. You can get really granular with PowerShell now. And in PowerShell 4, constrained endpoints are very easy to create. In PowerShell 3, they were very difficult.
Okay. Another question, it's about the SDN. If we are talking about remote tank, and you talked about server going down 2 a.m.,
mm-hmm.
which I don't know about you, but I don't want to woke up at 2 a.m.
Yes.
to go to repair my server.
Mm-hmm.
How do I make my servers auto-repair? For mm-hmm. example, I don't know, making sure that they're available for remote tank.
Sure, yeah, yeah. Well, it's actually easy. What I would do is I would set up a specific server that would be my monitoring server. And then I would create a permanent Windows event that would monitor for when that server went away. And then if that server went away, then the next thing that we would need to do is then we could restart the server. Okay, it's a bit difficult to really look at the different conditions. So for instance, if the server was to hang, so one process all of a sudden takes up 100% of the CPU time. Okay, so the server is still there, it's still up, it has not gone away, so that would not generate an event that the server was no longer there. So I would need to have a different test, maybe I use test connection. You know, to see if it's going to accept a WSMAN connection. And if something was eating up all the CPU time, it would not accept that connection. And so then when that happened, then I would just call restart the server.
Yeah, I was thinking more along the lines of updating the configuration right on the server. Do I set up schedule tasks for it and run the command let you show again and again?
Yes. So if the server is going to be up, but somebody deletes files or changes services or something like that, then you just create a scheduled task and have it run every hour, every half hour, every 15 minutes, whatever time frame. If it's a critical server, then maybe you would reapply the configuration every 5 minutes or something. Yeah. You can get very detailed, with the service. It just runs as a job, and it will update the configuration automatically.
And there is also a possibility which doesn't mention in the presentation, we showed something which is called push mode, where you are pushing your configuration from your client to the server. And there is also pull mode, when the server is itself checking some store of the configurations and is pulling it from this configuration server. So you can do that, it will be checking periodically that pull server, and if you update the configuration or the server found that its configuration is broken, it can update itself manually or by its own.
Yes.
But let's say that the next level we can go for that.
Question maybe regarding to previous two. Is it possible, because the monitoring solution, I can mention system center operation manager that does that job exactly, but is it possible to report against those MOF files? Let's say I just want to see what's wrong with my configuration.
Yes, there is a couple of commandlets that we have that are available, and so we have git DSC configuration. So this will go and pull back. So if you have configured DSC on a machine, then you can use git DSC configuration to pull it back. You can use test DSC configuration to test and see if the configuration is valid or not. And so those would be the two that you might use.
There is a support of DSC for Exchange and SharePoint. DSC resources.
This is a question or a statement?
That's a question.
I have absolutely no idea.
not now. There are some new resources for SQL, for IOL,
yes.
So I expect that it will be in the future.
But along with that same token, under Exchange sits upon top of Windows. And so therefore, a lot of stuff I could do using DSC. For one thing, there used to be a problem back when I was in consulting where sometimes certain services, because Exchange has like 7 services that need to be running, and sometimes one of those services would stop or something, or somebody might stop them, because whatever reason, and then they forget to start it back up again or something. The backup program used to stop some of the services, and if the backup didn't complete, it would restart the service, so you come in the morning and there's no email or no calendaring or something. Well, the BlackBerry service isn't working, so because of that, you could use a DSC using the service provider and specify that you wanted all of your services to be running. You could use, you've got OWA, which is a web thing. So you could use the web provider that we've got to squirrel around with that, you know, if you wanted to make some changes or do this, that, or the other. So there are some different different things within the stuff that we have in DSC right now that would help with Exchange or with SharePoint, but not specifically for Exchange. So when I see an Exchange DSC provider, you know, I'm thinking about something that allows me to deploy a you know, a front end server, or whatever, that would allow me to do some stuff, be able to scale quickly, create Exchange users and junk like that. And that does not exist right now. Yes, sir.
Is there in the PowerShell for command lines for administrating of Windows Azure and Windows Azure Pack?
Absolutely. If you go to the scripting guide blog and type in like Azure, then I have a number of scripting guide blog articles that talk about using Azure. I just finished up a week of scripting guide articles about Office 365, which is using an Azure module. So if you're using Azure, there's a number of there are some modules. It's actually very, very, very easy to do. It's a bit hard to understand how to get started, but once you get started, it's pretty easy to do. So you have to download two things. One is an online sign-in module that makes it easier for you to sign in, and then the other is the actual Azure management module. And so once you have this, then you just open up your PowerShell prompt or you write a script, and you can use this to create users in your online provisioning, to create groups, set security, enable users, disable users, the whole, everything that you need to do can be scripted, including, reading your logs, checking on accounting, to see how many licenses you've got, how many licenses you're using, when's the last time somebody logged in, they didn't log in, all of that information is right there. It's a whole other world for scripting. But I do have some resources on my blog that can help you to get started.
And there is one more resource available for all IT professionals, which is called Microsoft Virtual Academy. It's shortcut MVA. And there is one course held in Czech language, and David Moravec has a module which describes how to use PowerShell against Windows Azure services. So if you are interested, just check MVA.
Probably a quick question. Is there a possibility to put a dependency in the DSC on like a disk space available? Free disk space, something like that.
I have absolutely no idea. How many times can I say that now?
I'm just thinking about the script resource.
As a script resource, you can do it. Yes.
One of the resources was a script resource, so you will write a script to check the size, in space on this.
And what you will want to do is return true or false from that. So
that script resource is something like if something doesn't work or it's not implemented yet, then you use the script resource and you write something.
Or you probably use a workflow check first, then do some cleanup. And then
run your own. Yeah, you can do that too.
you are with DSC, you are writing the configuration which then creates the demo file. Is there any way how, for example, for existing server, just run some DSC command line to provide you some, for example, a snapshot of all existing services down to the demo file?
Like something like creating the initial computer, taking mm-hmm. configuration from there, and based on that configuration, creating a file, like template or something.
Yeah.
Reference computer.
We can't. Well, what you could do is there's an article on the PowerShell team blog where they talk about doing a bare metal deployment. But what you would want to do is to, we can't read a configuration and then create a DSC file, MOF file automatically. Not in this version of PowerShell, and probably not in the next version either. But if you had your reference template and then you had your DSC that configured it exactly the way that you wanted everything to be, then it would be pretty easy to create your provisioning system from that. But the thing is that you'd have to, now the other thing you could do is you could create a virtual machine or a VHD, you know, of your initial how you want stuff to be. And then based upon that, then you could snapshot that and create your other machines and configure that using DSC. But we can't read a configuration yet, you know, so, not yet. So somebody may write a program to do it. You're not the first person that's asked the question. As a matter of fact, when we first presented this at Tech Ed, that was one of the first questions that was asked. So it's something that, you know, obviously the community is thinking about. It's something that would definitely be worthwhile. Yeah. But, you know, we can't do that yet.
Last question.
Is parallelism in workflow somehow limited? How many commands or I can run, or is somehow a limited number of CPUs or something?
Yeah, you're limited. You're limited by your CPU. You're limited by your memory. You're limited by your network bandwidth. That is it is configurable. Like how many that you want to do. But remember, we're relying on PowerShell remoting to do this. And so by default, we do like up to 32 connections simultaneously. You can bump that up or down. But it's something that you want to be really careful with. There was a good series of articles written by George Mayhew, who was a PowerShell guru. He is a Microsoft Premier Field Engineer in Canada. And he wrote a series of like three or four articles talking about looking at performance considerations. And he actually found that bumping up the number of simultaneous threads did not always generate increased speed. Sometimes it actually slowed stuff down, because the operating system had to try to manage all these extra threads. And you know, the network adapter, the memory, the disk, you know, whatever, there was something in the system that was slower than PowerShell was. It can be configured. It is limited by resource constraints.
Dobrá, dámy a pánové, to bylo pro dnešek všechno. My vám moc děkujeme za to, že jste přišli. Díky za účast, přeji vám hezký zbytek dne. Budeme se těšit zase někdy příště, na shledanou.
A jenom poslední krátká věc, pokud byste chtěli svůj úponek na knížky o PowerShow, tak ti z vás, kteří se nepali, máte ještě možnost tady ustavit. Děkujeme vám moc krát, přejeme hezký den a hlavně děkuju.